This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores. I am Peddler Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk. It is January 15th, 2020. Welcome to Bicycle Talk with my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch, a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show and listening live, you can call us right now at 860-486-9487, or you can email me at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. If you're listening to this on podcast, you can send an email to bicycletalk1@gmail.com, or you can visit and comment at Bicycle Talk on Facebook. You can also listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org or on iTunes. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. Starting out with Ron's rant of the week. As if Florida doesn't have enough problems. All right. Florida, by the way, if you have been paying any attention to what happens across our country as far as cycling-related, car-related deaths, Florida is number one in the country, absolutely number one. There are more deaths per capita, per I don't think it's 1,000 or whatever what I have here. This is more on a per capita basis. Florida has an annual average of 5.7 cyclist deaths per million residents, by far the most of any state. So the national death rate is 2.3 per 1 million. But Florida, right up there on the top. So as if there's not enough going on there, a cyclist in North Miami Beach, Florida, who led group rides from a South Florida bike shop, was murdered Sunday morning in the parking lot from where the ride started.
What?
So Clifton Cargill, 51 years old, was shot and killed in the parking lot of Bell's Bicycles in North Miami Beach while inside his car waiting to lead a ride, the morning ride, on the Sunday morning ride. So who knows why they don't really have, there's no motive that has been reported. It's being investigated right now. We have no idea. But, you know, you're out there riding your bike all this time, and then somebody comes up and shoots you in your car. Anyway, it's noteworthy. It's all over the bicycle news feed that I'm attached to, so I thought I might bring it up as Ron's rant of the week. Isn't it bad enough that we have to worry about people driving their cars into us, but now we have to worry about getting shot? Anyway, so there is going to be a memorial ride, and the I believe that was on the next piece here, that there is going to be a memorial ride at the end of the month, and it is to raise money for awareness to gun violence. Anyway, I thought I'd bring it up. It's Ron's rant of the week. It's very unfortunate. And while we're here, I will mention the top 10 states that have issues with deadliest states for cyclists per capita. Number one is Florida. Number two is Louisiana. And we're talking like a pretty big gap between Florida and Louisiana. It just really drops down, followed by New Mexico, Arizona, South Carolina, California, Oregon, North Carolina, Michigan, and New York. Those are your top 10. And Connecticut, because we are broadcasting here from Connecticut, is number 18. We have 1.8 deaths per million here in Connecticut. So, not terrible, but there were six last year. So, you know, it happens. It happens. You know, be careful out there. Wear something bright. Use flashy lights, please, anything. I am particularly fond of the front flashy light, even though I know the back one is probably the most effective because we have cars coming up from behind us. But I like that front one because I hear vehicles slowing down as they're approaching me when they see that front light. I think they're very effective, and I've seen them while driving a motorized vehicle. They really stick out. You definitely know there is a bicycle coming at you down the road, and then you prepare for what you must prepare for when you get to that cyclist. And it may be someone who is doing one of Fran's favorite functions and causing the Oreo cookie or the Oreo sandwich, and they're attempting to pass the cyclist when they really shouldn't. And then they try to jeopardize
you. The Oreo maneuver is when they pass a cyclist when there's an oncoming car.
Right. Exactly.
And they become the creamy center. Yeah. Don't be the creamy center.
Don't be the creamy center. Right. Very good. Very good. Thank you, Fran. So anyway, that's that's my rant of the week. It's about, you know, gosh, isn't it bad enough we have to deal with these other things, but then we have to deal with that. Anyway, on a positive side, Fran, do you know what CABDA is?
What? Say it again.
CABDA. C-A-B-D-A.
CABDA. I might have
you're,
known
you're
it.
You're probably going to look it up, but you can. That's all right. I'll tell you what
remember.
It is. It's the Chicago Area Bicycle Dealers Association.
Oh, yeah. I think I remember that.
And
they're having a show.
They have expanded now, and they have more than just the Chicago show. They've always been very dealer-oriented. They've always had a day which is open to consumers, so people can check out all the new cool stuff that the people in the bicycle shops get to see firsthand, and then ask questions and become informed and hopefully generate lots of enthusiasm so that they can, you know, then go to the local bike shop and say, hey, I was at the show and I saw this thing. When are you going to get yours in? Blah, blah, blah. Anyway, so there is a CABDA West, which is going on right this very moment as we speak here on WHUS and stores. And we are, show director James Kirsten told the Bicycle Retail and Industry News he's anticipating more than 2,200 attendees this week, which is huge. That's a lot of people. That's for just a regional bike show. I'm very, very impressed. So CABDA, I believe, has an East show also that they're doing. And, of course, the famous CABDA show in Chicago, which has been there forever, is also happening. So anyway, if you are a total bicycle geek, and I'm going to imagine that you probably have at least a trace of geekdom in you because you are listening to this podcast or radio show, then maybe you want to check it out and see when it comes closest to you, and check out all the new cool stuff, because there's lots of cool stuff going on. There's all sorts of crazy things going on in the bicycle industry as far as the technical side of bicycles and all. So if you want to learn a little something, hang out with people that think like you think, you know, have some fun. It's always a good time. So anyway, that's my positive side as CABDA West opens with Education Day, big growth in brands and registered retailers. So moving on from that, we have the next thing on my list, which is the Maintenance Minute. Okay, I'm going to go to body maintenance on this one. And this is a good one. Fran, you should pay attention here because our good friend Celine Yeager and friend of the show and your show too has an article that came out on January 8th through her sources, Bicycling Magazine, et cetera. And it's all about the best diets that are good for cyclists. I thought that was kind of neat. So it is a body maintenance part of our Maintenance Minute this week. And which are the best diets that are good for cyclists? And there was a report from the 2020 U.S. News and World Report rankings for endurance athletes that came out. And Celine has played around with this a little bit. She has a list here of the U.S. News and World Report has a best popular diets for the last 10 years. For 2020, they listed the top 35 based on how good they are for your health, fitness, and long-term weight management. With the help of veteran sports nutritionists, Leslie Bonsi, Bicycling filtered the list for endurance athletes. Popular diets such as the Mediterranean diet, DASH, the Flexitarian stand out as some of the best options for athletes. So anyway, so we go to the Mediterranean diet. There's no surprise. It's number one by U.S. News and World Report. And Fran, give me some feedback on the Mediterranean diet.
The interesting thing is that the three diets that you picked, which is the Mediterranean diet and the DASH and the Flexitarian diet, the thing that they all have in common is variety, which is yay. That's good for me because I like variety. And the interesting thing is that they're not particularly low carb. They're not particularly high carb. They're basically balanced.
Yay.
And so the Mediterranean diet, They don't eat a huge amount of meat, and they're basically plant-based diets with a little bit of animal protein in them. So, right. You know, if you're going to eat a Mediterranean diet, you're going to eat a lot of vegetables and fruit. You're going to eat some whole grains, and they do eat crusty bread. They do eat beans, and they do eat nuts and, like we said, legumes. And they eat fish and seafood at least a couple of times a week like we do. And moderate amounts, they don't really leave anything out. They do moderate amounts of poultry, eggs, cheese, and yogurt.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't like, you know, pound dairy all day, but they use dairy as a condiment. They regularly use olive oil and herbs and spices, and they have small amounts of sweets and red meat, and they don't eat a lot of red meat. And they do use moderate amounts of red wine if you drink. So so it's a very balanced diet, and if you like to eat, you know, if you like to eat your produce, it's a great way to go.
I like to eat.
You like to eat.
I
That's
do
good.
Like to eat.
Right. So some people, you know, some people prefer to be paleo, which means that they're going to leave out the beans and the dairy. Some people find the dairy is inflammatory. In these diets, you don't do that. Mm-hmm. Obviously, if you are trying to eat a Mediterranean diet and you know that you're allergic to dairy, you shouldn't eat it. In fact, if you have a food, if you eat a food and it makes you sick, shouldn't eat it.
Don't eat it.
Whether you're allergic, whether you know if you're allergic to it or not, if you, every time you eat it, you don't feel good. Doesn't make sense
right.
to eat it.
Even if it gives you immense amounts of enjoyment as you're eating it, but if it comes back afterwards and says, you shouldn't have done
and
that,
if you're
then
trying,
you shouldn't have done that.
If you're trying to perform athletically and you have a bad belly, that's
a
going
huge
to mess up.
Problem.
Well, you need to be able to absorb your nutrients, and you're not going to be able to do that if you're eating a food that doesn't work for you.
Right.
So the Mediterranean diet, you know, because of all of the phytonutrients you're getting and the olive oil, it's going to reduce inflammation. And inflammation is something that you increase when you're doing heavy athletics. So balancing that with a high produce diet, I like to eat Mediterranean. I mean, that's basically how we eat.
It is
how we eat. We don't always eat beans, but we eat beans sometimes.
We eat beans sometimes.
That is basically how we eat because we have fish, you know, three or four times a week. And we don't eat a lot of red meat. We have red meat. Some weeks we don't have any at all. You know, and some weeks we have a burger. I don't know if you eat more than me. You haven't been eating as much lately. It's interesting.
I haven't been eating as much.
Red meat.
No, you know, I was actually kind of feeling like I might do that this
Maybe
evening.
You should get a
I'm not sure.
Get a steak. It's
fine. I might do that.
So the DASH diet is...
So DASH stands for dietary... approaches to stop hypertension.
Yeah, and it's very similar to the Mediterranean. I don't
it
know how it's different
same.
Than the Mediterranean diet because it's basically a lot of fruit and vegetables. They tell you low-fat dairy because they have horrific fear of saturated fat, which I believe is unfounded.
Right.
So high-fat dairy, in my opinion, or normal-fat dairy, dairy that doesn't have the fat removed is actually better for you because the fat that's dairy fat is actually good for you. It has omega-3 fats in it.
Right.
It's anti-inflammatory. The fat that's actually bad for you is when you cook vegetable oils at high heat and then they become rancid and hydrogenated. That's what's bad for you. But I don't think it's necessary to eat low-fat dairy. I don't think it's good to pound cheese to have, like, you know, if when you're in these diets, when you're consuming dairy, you're using dairy as a condiment. You're not drinking huge glasses of milk and having milkshakes.
So we grate a little cheese on top of our salads.
You got it. Your huge salad has a little bit of cheese on top of it. That's exactly right. Or you have a little bit of yogurt. You have a little bit of yogurt with your fruit, and you don't have like a gallon of it. And most of your diet is fruits and vegetables. In this one, they're doing the low-fat dairy. It's not necessary to do the low-fat dairy. And they also, they're really, this diet I don't agree with because they have fear of saturated fat.
And it also limits sodium intake?
Yes.
To 2,300 milligram daily limit?
And that may be useful. Not everybody has a sodium problem, but I do, the whole sodium question has to do with when you're eating a lot of processed food, you're probably eating too much starch and sugar and not enough produce, or whatever processed stuff you're eating has a lot of salt added to it. And then if you're not backing that up by eating a lot of produce, you are going to get too much salt.
Right.
But if you eat the DASH diet or if you eat the Mediterranean diet and you use a little good quality salt on your salad, that's not going to hurt you because you have so much more potassium, magnesium, and calcium to counterbalance that. Then you have flexitarian,
yeah,
which is not exclusively plant-based. And again,
it is a vegetarian diet.
It's flexitarian. It encourages plant-based eating and eating non-meat proteins. But I don't think they tell you to not have any animal protein at all. So again, this diet is very similar to the last two. See, the Mediterranean diet doesn't restrict. It says eat a little bit of dairy, and it doesn't matter if it's low fat. In the DASH diet, they specifically recommend low-fat dairy and watching your sodium. That's really the main difference between that and the Mediterranean diet. Then the flexitarian diet is just encourage you to eat a lot of produce and have a few days a week where you eat non-meat proteins at like eggs and dairy, mm-hmm. and beans and nuts and seeds. And but you can have a little bit of
salmon or chicken.
Or
something like that.
Yeah. Right. Which is very similar to the Mediterranean.
So I was going to say, they all look really close to one another.
And what they're doing is they're not telling you to like completely cut your carbs. They are telling you to eat mostly fruits and vegetables, clean protein, nuts and seeds, and some beans. So they're very similar. And what's nice about these diets is you're not necessarily counting your carbs. You're not restricting any foods. There are some people who have to restrict foods in order to get results, but in these diets, you're not. So here's this MIND diet.
Yeah, this one's interesting.
Yes.
It's Mediterranean DASH intervention for neurodegenerative delay.
Yeah. So then you're going to eat beans, berries, whole. Again, it's really similar.
It's very similar.
Except that they say that they tell you that they take out cheese and butter.
Yeah.
I agree with staying away from the sweets and fried foods and stick margin, but unless you're allergic, I don't know if you have to take out the cheese and the butter. Because, again, this is about fear of saturated fat and fear of dairy fat, which I don't think you have. I think dairy protein is more concerning than dairy fat. And, of course, lactose, if you're lactose intolerant, is a problem. But otherwise, any diet, as long as you are you're not one of those rare people who really can't do produce, like our friend Carl Goldkamp, who cured himself of, inflammatory bowel disease by doing the keto carnivore diet.
The meat thing.
Unless you're one of those, if you are a person who does very well with produce, eating mostly produce is a good way to go. And I am one of those. And, you know, the more produce I eat, the better off I am. And all of these diets do that. And if you... this is something you could check in with yourself. Are you eating enough produce? Are you eating enough clean protein? Or are you relying on, you know, too much starchy food, too much pasta, too much rice, too much bread? And that is what I usually see people doing. Too much white stuff.
Yeah.
Bread and cheese. And eating way too much of it and not focusing on the plant stuff and even the clean protein.
White flour, white rice, white sugar. Right.
White pasta. White cheese.
Right.
For sure. White milk.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you're eating the white diet and that's all you're eating. So then there's a Nordic diet, which focuses on things that Scandinavian people eat.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you, Icelandic yogurt is very good. It's not actually yogurt. It's skyr. And it's a lot thicker and heavier.
So it's thicker, yeah.
It's wonderful. Yep. It's really good. But they suggest that you eat elk and lingonberries. Those are hard to find. If you're in Newfoundland, you can find lingonberries, although they're called partridge berries up there. And they're wonderful. They're like slightly sweeter cranberries. They're very good. You know, if you can get yourself some lingonberry or partridge berry jam or juice, it's very good for you. Really high in anthocyanins. They also want you to eat elk.
Are we talking about the creature?
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know where I'm going to get the elk. And I'm probably not going to eat the elk.
So would the elk be similar to venison?
Sure. Right.
It's in the same family.
Yeah, right. Yeah, right. So down here you would eat deer. But, I'm probably not going to eat deer myself.
Yeah, probably
myself.
Not going to do that.
But, but you can if you want to. If you do well with that level of animal protein, you can eat that. It's good for you. I just don't digest it well. So I'm not a big mammal eater.
I know you're not.
Because I not, and it's mostly because I don't digest it well. I do better lower on the food chain. I do better with poultry, and I do fine with poultry and fish. And even those I can't overdo. I'm a good pegan, or a good, you know.
Pegan?
Yeah, pesco vegetarian.
Okay.
Yeah, eating. Not pesco vegetarian. No, pegan is actually paleo vegan.
Okay.
Where you eat a lot of, and pegan is really, you're supposed to avoid dairy. But, I mean, I'm a good Mediterranean diet person, really.
Yeah.
Because I got a little Mediterranean.
Primarily what we eat, you know, right. It really is.
Lots of olive oil and, you know, lots of salad, lots of vegetables and fruit. And I like figs. I eat figs.
Yeah.
So the Nordic diet, guess what? You're eating some elk and lingonberries and Icelandic yogurt. And then you're eating vegetables, whole grains, fish, organic, avoiding additives. Very similar to the above, except you're going to get some elk and lingonberries. Then there's TLC, which is therapeutic lifestyle changes. And then it's grounded in whole grains, at least 6 servings a day from complex carbohydrate foods. I'm not good with this one. Too much grain. No. My opinion, way too much grain. Couple of servings of fruit and low-fat dairy. Again, low-fat dairy and then 6 servings of grains. No, thank you.
This is pointed more towards endurance athletes who sometimes unnecessarily shortchange themselves
on the carbs.
For their sport. There's an emphasis on legumes, which pull double duty as protein and carbohydrate sources, as well as helping lower cholesterol. You can ride until the cows come home and still have elevated lipid levels. This diet may help fuel your riding and lower your cholesterol.
Well, this is the thing, that one of the things we're going to finally come round to is that the diet an athlete should eat is the one that works
for them. The one that works.
And athletes are going to have to dial that in. But we do know a lot of chubby cyclists because they probably overdo on the carbs.
A lot.
Well, and they probably overdo the carbs and they don't eat the produce. And the thing is, as you get older and you're a woman, it's harder to keep trim. Because your hormones are working against you, and you eat the same foods that you ate 10 years ago, and it's still hard, and it's harder to lose weight and keep your weight down. And, you know, when you ride your bike a lot, if you're not doing intervals, you're doing a lot of long cardio, which isn't necessarily the best thing for a fat loss.
Right. And then you have the beer in the parking lot afterwards.
Oh, yes.
Which
right.
is another typical
that's not my
thing
problem.
With chubby cyclists. You
yeah,
see
that's
all
not
the time.
That's not my problem. My problem.
No, I know.
My problem is the sweets. That's my issue.
Mm-hmm.
The beer I could take or leave. The pastry, that's another story. And then you have volumetrics. So volumetrics is interesting. You're going to be shocked when you hear this. They eat a lot of fruits and vegetables.
What is different about any of these?
There's a few tweaks. But
they're little tweaks, but they're all kind of based on the same idea.
They're very similar. So the volumetrics is you eat foods that are high volume, high nutrient dense, or low volume. It's high volume, high nutrient density fruits and vegetables. They have a lot of water in them. You know, you eat... So foods based on energy density and water content. So you you eat foods with low energy density and high water content, like fruits and non-starchy vegetables and soups, and go easy on the high density foods. So depending on the athlete, because you said that TLC diet, that's high carb for really high intensity athletes, if that works for that person. The thing with, you know, if you're doing a lot of heavy exercise, you have to dial it in, and you have to figure out, what your sweet spot for carbs is. Haha, your sweet spot for carbs.
Right.
But that's something you have to figure out, and that's going to be different for everybody.
Right.
That some people need more carbs depending on what their activity is going to be. But people, one of the things that we used to talk about, because I had a training with Tracy Drews, and she's awesome. This nice coach down in, I'm not sure. Hopefully she's still crouching. I don't know. But Tracy Drews, I trained with her in North Carolina.
She was working for Carmichael, right?
You got it.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
And so she said, what we talked about is when you're on the bike, eat for your workout. So if you need to use your gels or your carbs or your Stroop waffles or whatever, eat those when you're on the bike. And then when you're away from the bike, when you're at the table, then maybe that's when you look at your fruits and vegetables and clean protein and eat less of your carbs. And that, again, that's going to depend on the person. But if you're having a weight issue, the first thing you do is you cut your carbs, but you maybe don't want to cut your carbs while you're actually on the bike. So then there's the Asian diet.
Mm.
It has fruits and vegetables in it, and herbs and spices.
Surprise, surprise.
No. Leafy greens,
rice,
legumes,
noodles,
nuts and seeds.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Fish or shellfish twice a week. Moderate eggs, poultry, and cooking oils. Less frequent servings of red meat and sweets. So it's they're all really similar. And then here's vegetarian.
Mm-hmm.
And eating a vegetarian diet where you don't eat any animal protein, and you may be over lacto or not. Vegans exclude all animal and animal-based foods. All the top-ranking diets are plant-based, eating a lot of fruits and vegetables.
Yeah, and some vegetarians avoid eggs and dairy as well.
So plant-based athletes get enough carbohydrates and they get more essential phytonutrients because they're eating more produce.
Mm-hmm.
So people who are vegetarians may be focusing on eating more vegetables.
Sure.
But we don't want you to be a carbotarian where,
right.
Where
I love
you're
that.
Eating.
I love that term.
Yeah, I didn't make it. I didn't make that up.
You didn't make that up?
No.
Oh, I thought
no.
That was yours.
No. I think
mm-hmm.
that's Jaden Caione teaching.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. You don't want to be a carbotarian. You don't want to be eating
lots of carbs.
Oatmeal for breakfast, sandwiches for lunch,
right.
Pasta for dinner,
right.
And not putting any meat in it, and now you're a vegetarian. No, you need to eat your produce. And
right.
Then they mentioned Weight Watchers.
They mentioned Weight Watchers,
which is now called WW.
Yeah.
Well, guess what? WW did a thing. The current WW is on a point system,
mm-hmm.
and you get so many points based on, you enter information based on your lifestyle,
right.
And how much weight you want to lose. And then you have, it's this smart point system where they assign food and beverages a point value. And now a lot of produce has 0 points. So a lot of fruits and vegetables have no points at all. So you can eat unlimited fruits and vegetables.
What does that mean? Like celery, of course, has very little.
No points.
No calories.
So you can eat it all day.
So you can eat it all day long.
Right.
That's for sure. But
it's to encourage people
to eat
produce.
Carrots have calories.
They have calories. Yes,
right.
But not enough to not enough to mess up your
calories.
Diet. Yes, they have calories. But again, a calorie is not a calorie is not a calorie. If you have 100 calories of broccoli, it will not behave in your body the same way as
right.
100 calories of chicken,
mm-hmm.
and the chicken will certainly not behave the same when your body is 100 calories of donut.
Yeah.
The donut is going to behave a lot differently. Then remember that the whole thing about calories, when you talk about the calorie content of a food, that value is the amount of energy that it takes to burn that food to ash. It doesn't talk about how it's going to behave in your body. If you eat 200 calories of chicken breast, you're going to have a very different experience in your body than if you eat 200 calories of donut. That's just how it is. Because the protein in your body, it takes a lot of energy to metabolize that protein, to use your enzymes and your hydrochloric acid to break down that protein into amino acids, and then to impart the amino acids into your system. Your body, it's not your body's favorite source for carbohydrate and for energy. So when you eat protein, your body generally uses it to make new enzymes and to build structure. So that's very different than eating a donut, where all the carbohydrates are going to be either used as energy or stored as fat. And the poor quality oils are going to get imparted into your cell membranes, and your cells are not going to work as well. So, a donut is going to be much more likely, the same 200 calories, you're going to be much more likely to gain weight on the donut than you are on the chicken. Calories, not a calorie, is not a calorie. So in WW, they recognize that, and they make certain foods 0 points. But your fats and oils, your sweets,
mm-hmm.
and your proteins have points. And so the way it works right now is you can eat a lot of food and still keep within your points, which I think is very good that they've really changed it up that way. My only concern is that sometimes I think with WW that they accord too many points to essential fats and to protein, because those things are not going to, even though you're having 100 calories of fish oil, that fish oil is not going to make you gain weight. It's going to help you.
Mm-hmm.
So the thing is, if you look at all of these diets that Celine has pointed out, they all include a large variety of food, and most of them don't exclude too many foods. The one that's the most fun is the Mediterranean diet, because it really doesn't exclude anything.
Right.
But it does emphasize eating a lot of produce. But produce is the thing you should be eating the most. And this is what I tell everybody, that you should be eating produce more than anything else. At produce and clean protein, and add in nuts and seeds if you're not allergic to them, whole grains if that works for you, and dairy if you're not allergic to it. But, you know, you have to watch the dairy. Dairy can be allergenic, so you have mm-hmm. to watch out how much of that you eat. Whole grains can cause you to gain weight. And if you can get your energy boost from fruit, that might be a good way to go. But, again, everybody's going to be different about that. But if you eat mostly fruits and vegetables, or vegetables and fruit, more vegetables than fruit, and clean protein, you're going to do pretty well. And if you can get by being a vegetarian or a vegan, and you're happy and healthy doing that, that's fine. It's not my preferred thing, because I think it's a good idea to have some animal protein on board. But there are people who thrive on those diets. And if you do, then that's you. That's fine.
Yeah. Well, that's our maintenance minute. Body maintenance, which is the best diet.
I think that was longer than a minute.
I think it was a lot longer than a minute. It was brought to you by our good friend, Celine Yeager, and friend of the show, Celine Yeager, and the lovely Dr. Fran Storch with commentary.
Thanks.
Very, very nice. That was good. That was good. It's good to talk about. So moving on, I am going into content. And we talked last week about, I think I ranted about the New York City mayor.
De Blasio. Yes.
I ranted about him because he's got an e-bike issue and all these people that are delivering things in town that are using an electric bicycle to do it. Not a gigantic vehicle, not a consumer of, nasty, ugly gasoline and petroleum products spewing carbons out into the atmosphere. And he wants to get them out of there because they're, I don't know, in his way or whatever. So anyway, this was this is a follow up on that, because the new bill that was being presented on the 8th, which was last week's show. So we didn't really have information on it at this time. So I looked and saw that. What has happened is Governor Cuomo has delayed the e-bike legislation proposal.
It's Cuomo.
Cuomo, right. Okay, New York governor, he wants to bill to ensure sustainable vehicle alternatives to keep riders, pedestrians, and drivers safe. So there was this big issue, and now he has said that he would announce legislation during his State of the State speech, which he delivered on Wednesday. That was last Wednesday. He did not mention e-bikes in his speech, but in his written 2020 agenda outline released on Wednesday, he restated his desire to introduce a bill to ensure sustainable vehicle alternatives, such as e-scooters, to keep riders, pedestrians, and drivers safe. That was from his proposal, enact comprehensive e-bike legislation and introduce safe and environmental friendly e-scooter legislation, on page 102 in the agenda. No other details were released. So, and on December 26th, just so you know a little bit of the history on this, Cuomo vetoed a bill that would have given all classes of e-bikes the same rights on the road as traditional bicycles throughout the state. He cited the lack of a helmet requirement and other safety concerns. Only Class 1 pedal assist e-bikes are allowed in the city. The bill, which had faced a December 31st deadline to become law, would have given local municipalities the right to regulate e-bikes and e-scooters at their discretion. The state legislature over the summer passed the bill. Then after the veto, Cuomo tweeted, "There is no need for us to choose between legalizing e-bikes and safety, and I will propose a bill that does both on January 8th, of which he didn't really propose anything. So I guess they're still looking into it. That's what it looks like. The big issue for Cuomo was the use of electric transportation on public sidewalks. We shouldn't ride your bike on a sidewalk. Sidewalks for pedestrians. I have been over this over and over and over and over. Pedestrians are on sidewalks. vehicles are on roads. Anyway, but in addition, an increased number of food delivery workers are using throttle-powered e-bikes. That means that it's more like an electric motorcycle is really what it's like, but they're not that fast, more like an electric scooter, like a motor scooter type thing. Mayor Bill de Blasio began an initiative in 2014 to curb dangerous driving, which included e-bike riders. Oh, I'm sighing loudly into the microphone. Throttle-activated e-bike riders can be fined as much as $500 and have their bikes seized. Cuomo stated Wednesday in his agenda that he wants the bill to provide justice for e-bike workers. Transportation advocates have said that a crackdown on delivery workers who depend on e-bikes for their livelihood is unjust. There you go. Would you take away the delivery drivers, let's say their panel truck, one of those big, you know, the big step-up ones like UPS, for instance, is a classic example. They take up a lot more space on the road. They double park and block the road. There are all sorts of problems with that. And yet, they're legal. Why are they legal? Okay. So, anyway, I'm ranting a little bit on this. But it just infuriates me that we have people. I would like to take the governor and the mayor, and I would like them to ride a non-motorized or even an e-assist motorized delivery vehicle and let them see just how difficult it is. And maybe they would change their tune a little bit, you know? And maybe they would, when they order out for pizza the next time, they would be happy to see that their pizza actually came on time. Mm. So, you know. Anyway, it's what it is. So People for Bikes, which worked with the state legislator on the vetoed bill, defines Class 1 e-bikes as those providing assistance only when pedaling and turning off when reaching 20 miles per hour. Class 2 bikes feature a throttle-activated motor turning off when reaching 20 miles per hour. And Class 3 bikes provide assistance only when pedaling and turning off when reaching 28 miles per hour. Well, good luck to you to get it 28 miles an hour. That's impressive. So anyway, that's a little follow-up here on the e-bike legislation in New York, which is obviously a point of concern and conversation. And so we move on to the next lovely subject that's on here. I have a lot of stuff that came out of bicycle retail and industry news. If you are listening to this show and you have been affiliated somewhere in the bicycle industry over the years, you're very familiar with this journal. They have an online service also, which is very nice. And I love these guys because they really keep me, as I am no longer actively in the bicycle industry as I was for over 40 years, it keeps me up to date on what's going on out there. And one of the things that's going on out there, and I have talked about endlessly on previous shows, are the tariffs that are coming in on bicycles and such. So anyway, as we have seen, we have had a strong voice, we'll call it, in Washington, who has been all over the Chinese and the products that are coming out of China and wanting to really eliminate them, condemn them, whatever, regulate them a little more heavily. And understood, Europe has the same problem with this. There is a tendency for some of the business that comes out of China to undercut and actually produce product for less than it actually costs them to do it. And it's called dumping. And they dump product on the marketplace to gain traction. And it's supposed to be illegal in the world business situation. But anyway, so as we move on, we've noticed that these tariffs, they come to deadline. And then when they come to the deadline, we had an extension and maybe a single speed company gets in there. Was it State Bicycles? I think it was, that came in and they said, we're going to write a petition on this and we don't want to run into this problem because, you know, we've, we're,
you know, whatever, for whatever reason, they won, and they were able to keep the tariffs off of their bikes. And then there's a few other companies that are out there in the bicycle industry that are now fighting with it, and things are starting to happen. But the big one, the one that is really catching a lot of attention, are, once again, e-bikes. Electric assist bicycles are primarily made in China, mostly, and we'll call it Asia because there are other countries that are out there doing this, but they are definitely, they're definitely an issue as far as that goes. So there is now a customs ruling. This came out on January 12th, so just a few days ago, and there's a customs ruling that means e-bikes are excluded from the tariffs. Love it, love it. So they just kind of keep banging away at this thing, and the tariffs that were threatening the bicycle industry are slowly but surely crumbling apart, and everything that was said is, it's not what it was. So anyway, the U.S. Customs and Border Protection ruled that e-bikes fall under the same category as electric motorcycles. Electric motorcycles, okay. Electric bicycles, not okay. You tell me the difference. And therefore share an exclusion granted in September from the Trump administration's Section 301 tariffs on Chinese imports. The decision means importers of Chinese e-bikes are now exempt from paying the 25% tariff in the administration that the administration proposed or imposed in August of 2018. Importers should be able to collect previously paid tariffs as well. So you can get their money back. That's cool. So these rulings bring much-needed clarity to the lingering questions concerning current product exclusions and their application to e-bikes. The People for Bikes policy counselor, Alex Logman, we are grateful to see additional complete bicycle categories beyond kids' bikes, removing badly needed relief from the 301 tariffs. So anyway, This is good news. This is actually good news. So all these big scares about the things that are going on in the bicycle industry and how everything's just going to get jacked way up because they're not considered important. Isn't it funny how a motorcycle, an electric motorcycle, is far more important than an electric bicycle is? How do you get that kind of exclusion? I'll tell you how you do it. The motorcycle industry has more money. They probably have more lobbyists, and so therefore, there it is. And with that conversation I was having with our friend Rob over the New Year holiday, the electric motorcycle thing is a thing, and it's growing rapidly, and it's a pretty big deal. It's kind of cool. So that's just something else that's going on. But anyway, so that's that. In addition, it says right here in Bicycle Reader, tariffic news. 20-inch bikes granted extended, granted exclusion, and other items see reductions. So some of the reductions here, first of all, 20-inch bikes with 20-inch wheels, which is awesome. That's great. It means kids' bikes. But it doesn't mean kids' bikes. It means bikes like Bike Fridays, foldable bicycles, Bickertons, you know, the foldable, transportable ones that you can fold up and get on the train with or on the bus with, that sort of thing. They're all exempt. But now, the exclusion means importers will no longer have to pay the additional 25% 301 tariff on those bikes until the exclusion expires on August 7th, 2020. Okay. But but there's more. There's a whole lot more here, too, because they also, if I remember reading this, they also started putting an exclusion in on things like helmets and other various things that are purchased through Asia, and they're also coming off of this list, too. So all of this big scare that we had because somebody was rattling a saber in Washington and wanted to make a big stink is now it's all kind of slowly but surely falling apart, or at least it's being extended to the point where there's some reason that is coming through on this. So that's good news. I thought it was worth mentioning. I think it's important that we bring things like this up because it matters to all of us. So I also
wanted to mention this, and this goes beyond. So I was reading on another one of my feeds, and it was about, there's a lot of opinion out there, a lot of opinion about, you know, the bike sales are down and accessory sales are down in the bike shops, and the bike shops are down like in the head because they're depressed about all this and what's going to happen to your local bike shop. And there's an article that just appeared in Bicycle Retailer. It says more than half of the retailers have added service staff to their bicycle shops. So what's happened is it all comes down to the same thing. You can buy it wherever you want to buy it, but you got to get it fixed somewhere. You've got to get it assembled somewhere. You have to get it serviced somewhere. And so what is happening is the bicycle retailers are having to, they're backing off on their inventory, but they're increasing their service staff, so they're getting more and more service staff in there, which is actually good news. So here are some of the interesting stats, and this was done on a SurveyMonkey, and it was put out to all the bicycle shops for them to answer, and basically 89 of 400 shops increased their service department footprint this year. 143 reduced their spending on retail stock. 167 have already sent employees somewhere for training this year. 155 plan to send employees somewhere for training later this year. 165 attended an industry trade show. 103 added a service they didn't provide before, such as fitting, coaching, or pickup and delivery. And 145 added a service menu item, such as suspension services for tuning. The above numbers likely represent shops with a focused vision for the future, and they are finding ways to increase and maintain their overall revenue by shifting from heavily retail-supported to the very service-focused. So this is a good thing. This is definitely a good thing. There's lots of technical help out there. There are a number of service-oriented schools that you can send your employees to so they can learn more about all the new products that are out there. And it all comes down to the exact same thing, and that is that you eventually have to get it fixed, or you got to figure it out, or you're going to toss it. And why would you toss something that's perfectly good? It just needs a repair. So I'm going to say it again. I'm going to say it loud and clear. Everybody listen carefully. Please support your local bicycle shop as much as you possibly can. It's really, really important, and without them, you will find yourself someday without help. So a troubling statistic for this is that only half of the 400 respondents paid for all of the training their employee received, leaving others to split the costs. In some situations, the employee actually paid for the training themselves. A big shout out to the local bicycle shops and all bicycle shops. Investing in your employees is an investment in your own profitable future. If you're afraid that a person will take your money and run, then build policies to protect you. An agreement that can be made with an employee can stay on board for 3 years, 2 years, or they owe you back a certain percent based on the departure from your employment or within a predetermined timeline. So set up a little contract with them and say, hey, I'm going to send you to this training, but I need you to ensure and guarantee that you're going to stay here for the next couple of years. Now, you know, things happen, family matters, whatever it is, and you may have to leave and you might have a... But you may also have an employer who is sensitive to that sort of thing. So anyway, I just thought that was kind of a cool thing to bring up, because as we get deeper into our changes in the bike shop, these things are happening. It's all starting to happen. So we gotta look at ways to protect the future of the cycle industry, because I think it's real, real important. I'm a longtime supporter of it. So what's going on in Australia, Fran?
It's bad. It's burning.
It's burning.
Yeah.
So you know what happens this time of year in Australia? Kind of
no.
A big deal.
What?
It's the beginning of the UCI World Cycling, Road Cycling.
Oh, goodness.
And there's something called the Tour Down Under.
Yeah.
And it's in Australia. And so there's a lot of talk about this because, you know, Australia's on fire. And, of course, people are
concerned about the fact that they, you don't want to really be breathing the air. And so there is a big thing here going on. So this is from Cycling News, and the Tour Down Under is set to take place despite the Australian bushfires. It certainly is a problem. They're hoping that things are calming down by then. The race organization released a statement across the weekend stating that it was committed to staging the race as planned, but that the safety and well-being of everyone involved is our priority. Our thoughts are with those people and communities affected by the bushfires, and certainly with the Country Fire Service, the CFS, and others who continue to work so hard to keep South Australian people and property protected. We are in discussion with the Adelaide Hills Council, who are committed to seeing the Santos Tour Down Under running through the region. The council and DBTI, Department of Planning and Transport and Infrastructure, are working hard to ensure the routes are safe so both the men's and the women's races can go on as planned. So, as always, safety and well-being of everyone involved in the Santos Tour Down Under is our priority. So, anyway, we're going to keep our eyes on that one, because if it continues to burn, the race is slated to go down through the area that is on fire, or nearby at least, and the air quality can't be wonderful. Remember when we had the Olympics in China, in Beijing? And there was like this huge concern about air quality because all these athletes are going to Beijing. So they shut down the factories for like 2 months before the Olympics got there, just to clean up the air a little bit. It's a big deal. I mean, you're taking enough risk being a professional athlete. You shouldn't have to take that risk. So anyway, the Tour Down Under is currently on schedule and will be happening here real, real soon. We're going to keep our eyes open as far as what the condition of the air is down there. I know I would be a little concerned if I was an athlete that was heading in that direction. So we'll see what happens. And we've got other races that, we had here, like the Tour California is out this year. So, there's that going on. Certainly an issue. We've got, what else do we have coming up? Oh, yeah. There's this thing that happens in early February, and everybody gets excited about it. I think I mentioned this last week. And people, there's ads on TV, and all the advertisers throw out all this new stuff, and it's the World Cyclocross Championship. No, it's not, is it? No, it's the same weekend, though. It's Super Bowl weekend. It's Super Bowl weekend, and it will be the World Cyclocross Championships, and it's coming, and it's both on Saturday and Sunday because they run, a whole series of world championship races. So I will be dancing between TV ads and my internet feed for finding out what's going on there. But very exciting stuff coming up, and, it's coming soon. So more, and then finally the end of the cyclocross season as we know it. So we have a piece that we're going to wrap this thing up right now, but I have a piece that I'll bring out next week as we bring our show back up. We're going to talk a little bit about exercising in the evening and sleep quality, because I know a lot of people are out there and they get their fitness in towards the end of the day, and there is some concern on that. But anyway, we'll talk about that a little bit more. I have some interesting information from the Harvard Health Publishing of Harvard Medical School about this, and we'll talk more about that next week. And also, if I have time, we'll get a little preview on the Giro 2020. Ah, the Giro. Oh, lovely, lovely. So anyway, the views that are expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. My name is Peddlin' Ron, and you have been listening to Bicycle Talk with my co-host, Fran Storch, a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you've been listening to this live or on podcast and you'd like to comment, you can send an email to bicycletalk1@gmail.com, and you can also listen to more and past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org or on iTunes. If you'd like to comment, and have a comment, or you'd like to contribute information to the show or be on the show as a guest, send an email to bicycletalk1@gmail.com. This is Pedalin' Ron. Remember, keep the rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Storrs.